Welcome to the Voices of Homelessness podcast. I'm Donald Whitehead, your host. The Voices of Homelessness podcast is produced by the National Coalition for the Homeless. Each month, we bring to you different voices, voices that reflect the true nature of homelessness in America. And we hope that from these voices, you get a deeper, more compassionate understanding of why homelessness exists in the richest country in the history of the world. Today, we have three different guests. They come from different parts of the country. We have Rashima Melson, who is from Washington, D.C., the Washington, D.C. area. We have Lou. And that was not on purpose, Lou. Lou is actually from Cleveland, and we have a long-running conversation about me mispronouncing Lou's name. So Lou is from Cleveland, Ohio. And then we have Jose Cruz, who's from the Austin area. And we're going to let you hear from each of them today. We thank our producer, Kalita Harris, and we thank the National Coalition for the Homeless for producing this show. I want to start out by just having all of you tell us a little bit about your story. We know that there's a diverse set of reasons why people become homeless. We'll start with Rashima. Rashima, tell us a little bit about your story. What happened? How'd you get here? What's it like today?
Yeah, thank you all for having me today. From my family, my mom, she's a mother of six, and she's a single mom. And my dad, I met my dad through a picture with a gunshot wound in his head. And for me, I think I seen that picture when I was about five, and it set the stage for my life. So many issues with living in poverty for my mom and being unable to provide for us as a family. And we had bounced around the Southeast area of Washington, D.C. in Ward 7 and Ward 8. She had four different fathers to her six children, and all of them were deceased. And so it was just really difficult for her. And then eventually, at the age of maybe I want to say 11 or 12, she made a decision that she wanted to leave. We were living in Woodland Terrace, and she wanted a better life for us. And so she decided, let's go to Ohio. And we went to Ohio, and I think that was, I wouldn't say the worst decision of our lives, but I think as a kid, for me, it was the worst decision. That's where we fell into homelessness. We were living with a friend of hers, and he didn't want us there, so we turned off all the utilities. And so we were forced to leave, and then we wound up staying in an abandoned house in downtown Cincinnati. And then by the time my mom made up her mind that maybe we should go back to D.C., her public benefits were cut off because she had left the area too long. And so we started couch surfing, motel hopping, and some nights sleeping in really weird and unsafe places. And in certain times of my teenage years, I got separated from my family. And throughout that time, was dealing with a lot of abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and things that my mom still isn't to this day aware of, but just trying to be strong as like a 15-year-old kid. And then eventually I was trying to be better. I wanted better for myself. Something for me said to myself, you know, I want out of this horrible life. And by the time I had got to high school, I went to three different high schools, but 16 different schools overall due to this. People kept telling me education, you know, is the way out. And then by the time that I got to my last high school, it was Anacostia High School. So we came back to D.C. And then I was attending Anacostia High School for my junior and senior year. And we were living in the D.C. General Shelter at the time before it was knocked down. And I just tried to, as a kid, to stay focused. The goal was, people was telling me, if you go to college, you'll make it out. You'll have a great job. You can provide for your family. And that's the only thing that was in my mind. And even throughout growing up, I always read books. I love like Nora Roberts, Johanna Lindsay, to get to see like different or visualize different areas of the world, different regions of the world, things you don't see in Southeast. And most children who do live in Southeast believe that that is, you know, all there is to it. We don't get to travel. And so I used education as a tool to push me in order to eventually get out of poverty. I wound up being accepted at Georgetown University, and so I wound up going to Georgetown. And then I majored in JUPS, which is Justice and Peace Studies, which more so is the social justice area, dealing with juveniles, youth, and dealing with the criminal justice system. I wanted to be able to make a change because, as we all know, it's a big cycle. The criminal justice system, poverty, homelessness, it's all a big cycle. And I wanted to be able to make change. And so eventually I graduated from Georgetown. And I finally got my first like actual job. And I was doing like assisted living, helping out an older man to have a place to live, and finally saved up enough money to buy my first apartment. And so my homelessness ended for me in 2020 when COVID started. So it was actually really crazy. And then this year, maybe in a few weeks, my closing date is in a few weeks, I'll be a first-time home buyer, first-generation home buyer for my family. I'll be closing on my first house. And so I'm just super excited and just thankful that God has kept me this long, and I was able to come out of poverty and come out of homelessness. And, you know, I hope to continue to use my experience in life and my education to help others to also be able to move from crisis to self-sufficiency.
Rashima, what a powerful story. You know, when we talk about homeless children and homeless families, some people don't really understand the parents' homelessness and the impact it has on children. But what we often see is resilience. We see resilience in children that is unbelievable. And your story really underscores that. I know that you're working on a lot of really important projects. We'll talk a little bit about some of those. But I've seen a couple of movies. Homeless to Harvard is one of those. Yours should be Homeless to Georgetown. That's amazing. I have so many things to ask you. First of all, I didn't know you had been in Cincinnati. That's where I was born. That's where I grew up. And usually people do really well in Cincinnati, but it is a tough place when you're homeless. And I just really am always amazed. I learn so much more every time I talk to you. And I thank you very much. I'm going to ask you some questions about being an unaccompanied youth. You said you were separated from the family a couple of times. I'm going to come back to you, though, because I want to make sure we get the other voices here. Jose, we're going to go to you next. Austin, Texas. A lot of interesting things in Austin, Texas. I want to hear your story, but I know in Austin, there is one of the largest tiny home villages for homeless people. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Pretty amazing facility there, but there's also right now some of the worst sweeps in the country. So love to hear more about your experience there, and tell us what's going on with you now and how you became homeless.
Well, my name is Jose Cruz, and I'm originally from the Valley. I was born and raised in McAllen, Hidalgo City, small city of 1,000 people. I came from a reckless family, a dysfunctional family. My parents were, you know, physical abusive, verbal abused, and I was just traumatized, you know, through my parents. As the years went by, I went to the streets, didn't skip school. From there, I escalated. I was 10 years old. My mom couldn't cope with me. So she sent me to a foster home. And these people were taking care of me for a while, but not even them. Something happened there. I was abused at 10, sexually abused. I could not be trained to become a normal person. They sent me back to my parents. They did not tell my parents. My mom was taking care of me. And they getting taller. From that day on, my life went left field. I was, didn't know who I was. My whole entire image was screwed up. From those years that I was with my mom, and she didn't know what happened, I was still becoming reckless. Stayed on the street for so long. My mom was going out to bars to take care of us. We're seven in the family. And she did what she had to do. I turned to the streets to hang around with reckless people. You know, and I escalated. I became a criminal. I ended up in prison at 19 years old. Did 15 years for aggravated robbery, which I never held the gun. I was part of it. I demanded the money, but I was charged with aggravated robbery. Falsely accused, I did my time. During my time, I was supposed to do 5 years and then release to my mom. But while I was in there, my mom died while I was doing 4 years, and they would not let me go. My sister was going to provide more security, more FBIs, and nothing. They denied me, and I decided to do my entire time. I did my 15 years, and so they released me to Huntsville, Texas. I went in at 19. I believe I came out 32 years old. From that day on, when she died, I became homeless. You know, I don't know, maybe because I was in a dysfunctional family, you know. And so I ended up here in San Antonio, and then I came to Austin, and I traveled back and forth and trying to find a place to live. So I decided to stay here in Austin. A good place to be at. It just living expenses is growing by the day. You know, I've been here over 7 years now, and within 5 years, Austin has grown beautiful. But the cost of living for people that are without enough money are not able to afford a housing here on their own. Sure. So they need more assistance, you know, because lack of education or addiction to drugs, such as I was in alcohol. I've been 20 years of a habitual alcoholic. I gave up smoking cigarettes 2 years ago, drugs, marijuana, everything I gave up because I want to better myself. But during my time here, it's been so hard.
Well, Jose, thank you so much. I know it was very tough, and it's, you know, sometimes when we bring up some of that pain, we re-encounter it. So we appreciate you being able to get through that. We know how tough it is. Rashima, I want to go back to you because I know you have to leave. Tell us what happened after that. All of those things that you went through, what has it created in you now? What are you doing now with your life? Amazing. New homeowner. That's amazing. So one thing we want people to understand from Rashima is that, you know, homelessness is not a situation that is permanent. People do get through this. And that's why we want you to hear from people who've been through it and let you know how they've changed, how they've become valuable to society. They were valuable in the first place, but they're demonstrating it over and over again. And we need you to hear that. Rashima, what are you doing now?
So currently I'm working on multiple different projects. And so under National Coalition for the Homeless, I work as an administrator for the Bring America Now Home campaign, which we're working to end homelessness. And then I'm also working on other projects dealing with COC and coordinated entries, with helping people who are experiencing homelessness to have a better path navigating those services and providing supportive services in order to help them to see self-sufficiency. And so that's really my goal, is just to use my experience and then also to always lend a hand. And I don't say to turn around or look down because nobody is beneath me. But I want to be able to help people who are or who have experienced the same thing as me, and to be able to help them in the best way possible. So.
Amazing work. You're doing a lot of work on centering racial equity around the country too. Around the country, Rashima, she's not going to brag on herself, so I'm going to brag on her. She was selected out of a lot of people HUD looked at to work on projects to help communities decide how to make sure that there wasn't an overrepresentation of people of color in their communities. A very select few people got chosen for that. Rashima was one of them. Please watch out for her. She is a rising star. So, Lou, you've been personally waiting. I thought Rashima had to go a little sooner. My mistake there. But we want to hear from you. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you got here and what's going on with you now.
I actually don't have the stories people would assume. But I do have certain ideas or statements to give. Basically, in this country, 99% of people are homeless. Why? When you were little, the place you live, it's not under your name. By the time you grew up, if you don't go to college, it's maybe out of state, you probably stay in a dorm or you rent a place with other people sharing the rent. So the place you stay, still not under your name. You have a landlord now. Instead of the home your parents built for you with love. After you get a job, look at the living expenses in this country overall situation. How many people can actually afford to start getting enough money to even put a down payment to be a homeowner? Now you have to pay mortgage. So it's still not really under your name. Let's not forget how recession actually happened. People all tried to be the homeowner, to be truly independent, but they did not have the education for them to buy the proper mortgage package. So when economy went wrong, guess what? The fine prints popped up. So the place you already paid the how many months of the mortgage, now taken away again. So in my situation, I came to Cleveland originally for school. However, I got this accidental injury on my eyes. So that puts me out of finished school as a full-time student. So I started doing tutoring and other things. And this is the time actually I learned by helping either the people living in the area or even foreign students to go through some of the, we should call them bureaucracy, to get them any kind of help they need. So by the time the place I rented, not too far away from school, okay, close to school, that's like a house, two-family house over 100-something years old. When the plumbing finally went wrong, the landlord had find out he couldn't fix it by himself. The older design, you have to really take the floor, walls, everything apart in order to fix the whole plumbing problem. So I thought, okay, lots of time when I went to the downtown, the famous Cleveland Public Library for something, and I passed the place. Later, I realized that actually was a shelter. So I said, okay, maybe I can stay there for the time being. After landlord fixed the place, I can move back. However, it didn't go as planned. Things happened. Things went wrong, at least for me. So I ended up being trapped at this particular shelter. And this is the reason why I have a very different point of views about homeless service system.
Sure.
They can be helpful, but they can also exploit people experience homelessness.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And I want all of you to weigh in. We're going to go into a roundtable discussion. So In your experience, and I want each of you to weigh in with your own personal experience, you know, one at a time. If you don't have an answer for it, that's okay too. Of all the challenges in the shelter, you talked about exploitation. I think there was a capacity issue. I wonder if your Jose, your leaving the criminal justice system had any role in that as well. What were the barriers that were most, what were hardest to overcome for you? If you had to think of one or two things that made your transition into the shelter and your transition out of the shelter the hardest, tell me about what those were.
One of them was my family, you know, like I said, my mom, me and my mom was very close. And because of that, you know, it made it hard for me to think of being successful in the community. It just totally, besides my addiction, some cigarettes and alcohol. Alcohol was my hardest addiction. I broke, you know, I was bleeding blood through my mouth. And I had to call turkey on that one. And then cigarettes, since I was 15, I just quit about 3 years ago. So my habits were also my obstacles of stopping me from going forward in the right path.
So nothing in the shelters or programs, it was all kind of your personal issues that kind of kept you?
Yes, my personal issues were, I support the system for helping homeless. My opinion on that, my negative side on it is they take a little too long and the process is too picky on people, you know, and the requirements are a little bit too hard, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Lou or Rashima, either of you have anything that was a major barrier that you want to address?
I feel like for me, as a child, as a teenager, you don't really understand, you know, what's going on behind the scenes within the shelter. I just know that every time my mom would come back to our room, she's like, "We're still on this list." And I didn't know she was talking about the vouchers list. And, you know, for me, I feel like if there were two generational approaches used within shelters, I feel like we could, it would be easier to reduce and then cease homelessness. And I feel like because there were not a lot of services pertaining to the children, maybe it was like kids, but what do you do with teenagers? And you're going through puberty, you're trying to understand life. And so not having those services in place, and my mom, she's illiterate. And so it was a huge struggle for her trying to understand everything and me not even understanding anything at all. And so I feel like if we had more supportive services in place during these shelters, if we had more two-generational approaches for families, for family shelters, I think that would be helpful. And I think just for a personal barrier, I feel like my barriers were my breakthroughs. It inspired and pushed and motivated me, because the more pain I felt, the more it just motivated me to say, I will do anything I need to do to get out of here. And just like Jose, my brother had chose the streets. He just got released out of prison last year on an 8-year bid. He chose to go that route. And I had watched through other people around me going to substance abuse, going to the streets, and just choosing other routes to try to get out of this, or even to just cope, because it's a very hard life.
People are self-medicating sometimes when they do
that.
Yeah.
And so I watched through other people. They say, you know, if you're smart, you'll learn through your own mistakes. But if you're wise, you'll learn from the mistakes of others. And so I had seen that none of those routes worked. And I was like, what do I need to do? And so those barriers, I used them to just push me forward.
Let me ask you a follow-up question. When you were at Georgetown, if you were homeless, what was it like when spring break happened, or when there was a holiday? What did you use as a resource during that time?
We had GSP Scholars, Georgetown Scholarship Program, and they were specifically in place for first-generational students or impoverished students who couldn't afford the actual college, because I was on a full-ride scholarship And so during spring break, I would stay in my dorm. We were allowed to stay in the dorms during winter break. I always get depressed around like the family holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And it would naturally happen. I wouldn't have to look at a calendar. I would just understand it. And they provided housing for me throughout the winter break. We have a hotel on campus. And so they would pay for me to be able to stay at the hotel throughout winter break so that it wouldn't be as difficult. And so it was lonely, but it was still a blessing because I would prefer that than to not have anywhere to go.
Absolutely. Many students don't have that. They basically do whatever they can. We had a guest on a couple of months ago who talked about at winter break, she would hide in the dorm just to make sure that she wasn't out on the street. Good to know that there are some universities that acknowledge the need and support people. That's really good to hear. Lou, how about you? What were your biggest barriers there in the shelter system? And actually, just to for people to know, Lou and Jose are actually currently homeless, right? So you're in the midst of this issue as we speak. So Lou, what about you? What were the barriers that were most kind of, what were the ones that were the hardest to get through for you?
My own situation probably does not reflect overall. However, one thing important that goes to everybody. When people in any kind of hardship, our society right now do not recognize we need a system just to help people when they are in need, instead of they all have to be qualified by something, 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 something in order to get help. Because all these things takes time to process. You know, you have paperwork. Paperwork through paperwork, different levels, different offices they have to go through. By the time it's approved, your situation already went over the threshold. Your difficult situation already become bigger. Originally, you probably just need a small assistant, which can put you back online. But once the time got wasted with the paperwork, bureaucracy, all those things, for you to be qualified, guess what? Your original little trouble now becomes bigger. And this is the reason why our homeless people, the number has been increasing, especially when you get a bad economy, or even right now we are in the pandemic. So put everything with qualification is really a bad move. However, some politician would say, oh, you have to earn the help. You have to show that you are doing your part. However, we know nowadays, the bad economy or pandemic, these things is telling us, we don't have to do anything wrong. Things can just go wrong.
Yes.
The qualification bid is really everybody's obstacle.
Yes, we had a guest, our last guest on our last show, had a thriving business before COVID, and COVID actually forced him into a shelter. So I know that you have had some issues that we talked about prior to getting on with gender equity in the shelter system. You want to talk about that a little bit, or has that not been a barrier for you? I thought you kind of expressed
to that. Me personally, not, because they cannot even tell what gender identity I carry or what sexual orientations I'm in. Our service system has a very narrow scope because, remember, everything is on qualifications. So they don't really treat people as people. People are all different. Think about that. If naturally we have different eye colors, hair colors, complexion, of course, I mean, you have a different background, which gives you different knowledge base and skills. Then the same thing, the most basic part, when they say you should have your respect and dignity, where is it in the whole homeless service system? It's non-existent. And this kind of situation goes really, really bad, especially on the people who don't identify themselves as male or female. They don't say, I'm heterosexual. These people getting slammed just like the people who are getting discrimination just because of their complexion.
Exactly. There are so many issues with intersectionality. That's why I wanted to touch on them a little bit. I do want to, you know, we can talk about our personal situation and the barriers, the problems, but I think it's so important. I hope that some politicians or policymakers or even people in administration are listening. I know some do. So what I'd like to do is kind of get a laundry list from you. You know, how can we change this system? What can we do as a country, as individuals, as providers to change this system?
Just to give you the example from where I am, Cleveland, Ohio, Cuyahoga County. The COC actually even refused to put on Fair Housing Act or some literature about LGBTQ's protection into the so-called central intake office, because they think that will increase too much for all the service providers. So in this case, if you really want to make improvement, you really have to change the whole system. Because right now the systems are operated by the people only think about funding, only think about their data, their performance score, instead of thinking about people.
Thank you. That's very profound. The more I hear about individual systems, the more horrible it gets to me. But I do know that there are a lot of people in those systems that aren't open-minded enough to even take brochures. That's pretty scary, pretty sad. Other thoughts about like your laundry list, Jose or Rashima? What else would you provide?
I do, but it's very cliche. And I don't know, but I'm going to stick by it. I'm going to stand firm by what I believe. I believe that what we need, obviously we need resources, but I feel like we need more hope. We need more love. We need more investment into our communities. I feel like for me, if I didn't have hope that I could do it, regardless of all the bad that I was going through, regardless of the fact that people had put an X on the children in Southeast communities and said, you know, these children are gonna end up dead in jail or worse, they're never going to make it, that people didn't invest into impoverished communities all across the nation, because it's like we have canceled them out. And maybe if people believed in us more and gave us more opportunities and hope, I feel like not only will we put forth more effort, because it's not the fact that some people may have a poor mentality where they're like, you know what, I'm going to quit. I don't want to do this no more. But you don't wake up and say that. You go through a lifetime of trial and tribulations, and it puts you in a mentality, for one, you're being traumatized. For one, you're currently dealing with whatever, and then you're still facing the traumatization that you've already been through. And it's like, it's just really difficult. And I think that people, if you haven't experienced it yourself, it's hard for you to understand that, yes, you get chances over and over, but it's something about the mind that it's such a powerful tool, but you can destroy it. And through all the years of destruction that we've all been through, you can lose your mind. And it's not easy to just say, hey, I can help you, take my help. It's this easy. It's not that easy. And unfortunately, my mom, she just started working for Uber last year, I wanna say. And that was her first job since I've been born. Because she didn't believe in herself. She's illiterate, and I know that that's something that she's ashamed of. I love her anyway. And I feel like without her believing that she could do something, she didn't, and she cowered away and chose other sources of ways to make money. And I just feel like if we pour more hope and love, don't just throw money at us and say, we're gonna build houses, put you in the house, and everything's gonna be fine. Really invest in us, teach us skills, teach us other things. Tell us that you believe in us, show us that you believe in us, give us your time. You know, there's so many other things that can be done. And for people who do have a poor mentality, that's not something that I just say, oh, you have a poor mentality, and then I walk away. I understand that that's been developed through the years, through the harsh treatment that you've endured. And so, you know, just praying for everybody. And I'm, you know, for me, I just feel like that's what's needed. before we even get to the resources and the funding, you have to believe. You can't make a horse drink water. The horse has to really want to drink water, but you don't know if that horse has been abused or not for drinking water before. You just never know. And so, you know, that would be my laundry list.
And tangible. Hey, we're not gonna accept the cliche for that. That was very beautifully delivered and thoughtful in its approach. I remember a guy, I was in a shelter, a guy walked up to me and he said, not solicited at all, he said, don't let your situation be your destiny. And that was so powerful. And every time, you know, I get overwhelmed, I start thinking about that. So that idea of helping people grasp hope, but not blaming people for, you know, whatever challenges they have, because you haven't walked a day in their shoes and you don't know what they had to overcome to get here. Booker T. Washington said that. He said success should not be determined by one station in life, but the obstacles they had to overcome to get there. So powerful. That's what you just said. So not cliche at all. Very beautiful. Lou, I want to get to you. I see you patiently waiting over there. Sorry, those were two really important thoughts that we got from the last two. I want to hear from you. What do you have to say? I know you started off with what was needed, but do you have anything else you want to add?
Yeah. With my short legs, I think that today I have been following Rashina's steps. Now, I think one important thing is we have to let the horses who are willingly drinking water to understand why other horses have no way to drink that water. I'm saying that people right now, lots of them, they think they are okay. Either they think because they are white, or they think because they have a stable job currently, and they think they are fine. But these are the people actually having the ability to join the people who got into homelessness to fight the whole system. But we have to let them understand they are actually at risk more than they think they are. So they are the horses drinking the water well, but if we show them why other horses cannot get to this lake or pond, whatever, to drink water as freely as they can, then maybe they would join the force to tackle the whole system.
The only way we get to be a society where we embrace others and we make changes that we listen to everybody, because we may not have the solution in everything we say, but if we listen hard enough, there's some nuggets of solution in anything we say. So really appreciate you all being here. Fantastic panel. Give yourselves a round of applause. You have really been outstanding and amazing stories. And I know some of the stories aren't finished yet. There's still some other chapters to be written. But we thank you all for your willingness and courage to speak your mind and let us know how you feel. That's what we hope to do on every episode. We hope that we can bring you different experiences, all kinds of different levels of resilience, whether it's the everyday resilience in the shelter or the resilience of moving from childhood homelessness to home ownership. These are amazing stories, getting through the criminal justice system, dealing with gender inequities. You've heard all of that today. So we hope that you'll continue to listen to the voices of homelessness. These are the voices of homeless people and people who experience homelessness and who have experienced homelessness. And what they're bringing to you is some in-depth information that you could never get in a book, you won't get in a study, and you won't hear from the advocacy community. So I thank you for joining the Voices of Homelessness. This podcast is a production of the National Coalition for the Homeless. We thank our producer, Kalita Harris. We thank the rest of the NCH staff. We thank our wonderful guest. And we hope that you'll listen tonight. You'll come to our website, and that you'll join the Bring America Home Now campaign, because really none of these stories should be happening in the richest country in the history of the world. So I thank you. and have a wonderful day, evening, or whenever you're listening. Make it the best day. And remember that success should not be judged by one station in life, but the obstacles they had to overcome to get there. Thank you very much.